Start preparing for a no-deal Brexit, the EU warns its members. Flights, borders, data and trade will all be affected. This is the Marketplace Morning Report live from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. Britain's new Brexit secretary is headed to Brussels today. The European Commission will publish a paper instructing EU governments to do more to prepare for the possibility of no deal. Ilya Nothnagel is head of international trade at the Association of German Chambers of Commerce and Industry.
No deal Brexit immediately goes to the question of how do we continue doing business, like really physically? How are products checked? What about tariffs? Which tariffs do apply? Which kind of documents do I need? And at the border between the UK and the European Community, all that has to be prepared. For some of the companies which are only doing business in Europe, it would be the first time that they do business with a WTO member. So they need certificates of origin. You need a customs declaration. All that might be new.
That sounds incredibly complicated. What about some of the smaller companies that you represent? Is it possible for them to devote the time and money to sort all this out?
Most important is the outcome of the negotiations between London and Brussels, because we need concrete stuff. Now we are still talking in possibilities and things that might come or not come. And especially for small companies, that's a little bit a hurdle. But it seems like there is a long way to negotiate. There are a lot of questions still to be answered.
Ilya Nothnagel, let's do the numbers. Stock markets are mostly flat in Europe following a mixed session in Asia. Now, Cuba's National Assembly meets today to discuss the first draft of a new constitution, one that includes recognition of private land ownership for the first time since 1976. Now, that's important because there's a tension between economic reform and affirming communist principles. Mark Keller is lead analyst for Cuba at the Economist Intelligence Unit.
The Cuban government has really shown a lot of ambivalence about the reforms process. They've shown that they really don't want it to move too quickly. I mean, a perfect example of this was seen in August of last year when they put a halt on the issuing of private sector licenses, which they announced that they will only reinstate this December with a lot of new restrictions, because the real fear is of the private sector becoming too powerful, of inequality rising because the private sector employees are making too much money. It's really a genie that they don't want to let out of the bottle too quickly.
And how do ordinary Cubans feel? Because to me, from the outside, this idea that the Constitution is going to remain committed to socialist systems, but people will also be able to own property, some very powerful people could really profit, but ordinary people could be left behind.
I mean, I think that the Cuban government maintains its commitment to economic equality, which is really why you see some ambivalence about the private sector. So I don't think we're going to see sort of that post-communist oligarchy existing, which, you know, it does exist in the military, owns quite a lot of property, quite a lot of businesses, holds quite a lot of power. They're not flashy about it. And I think that's really the key. Ordinary Cubans, I think, are very frustrated with the sort of slow pace of reform. And you see that manifesting itself, you know, in high rates of migration abroad. But I don't think there's going to be, you know, say, political instability surrounding it. There's just frustration at the sort of tepid economy.
Mark Keller. Last week, President Trump criticized Germany for being captive to Russian energy. He was talking about the Nord Stream 2 pipeline that runs 700 miles from the westernmost tip of Russia into Germany. The pipeline connects the world's biggest exporter of natural gas with the largest economic bloc, but it also pits Germany against its allies. Kirsten Westphal is an energy analyst at the German Institute for International and Security Affairs.
All the discussions, especially in the EU, center around the question whether we can still trust Russia to deliver gas without any, well, interruptions, given the difficult geopolitical situation. The pipeline was announced in 2015, which was 1 year after Crimea annexation. And it has been linked to announcements by Gazprom, but also by Putin to bypass Ukraine.
Because Ukraine earns billions of dollars in transit fees, and that will end.
Exactly, almost 3 billion of euros last year. But on the other hand, we shouldn't forget that the pipeline received the support of European companies. It's not just German companies, it's Austrian company and French. And the economic assessment from the European side is very much that even though European demand might stay flat for natural gas, we will have more import needs given the fact that the own production is decreasing.
I suppose there's this other argument that if you buy the gas from Russia, you have a relationship and you can influence Russia.
Exactly. Supporters for the project say, well, look, as long as we have this interdependence, this keeps a channel open to engage with Russia. But of course, there are others that are saying, well, it's not politically opportune.
Now, President Trump also wants to sell gas to the Europeans. Is that viable, do you think?
Yeah, US LNG is a very important option, but it's more an option in times where we have price hikes, because at the moment, simply Russian gas is cheaper. And the other factor, of course, is that the paradigm of energy dominance is threatening for the EU, given the crisis of the trade war.
Kirsten Westfall. Finally, pity the Spanish military submarine that couldn't float and now can't dock. The S-80 submarine has had a lot of problems. First, it was too heavy, now it's too long, and the budget's doubled. If that's what it takes to float your boat. I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.